This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Robert Kirkman is a comic book lover's superhero. He spent the last 20 years releasing successful comics, notably The Walking Dead. He worked on the live-action version of that series, but Kirkman still writes for print, saying it's like playing in a world that he absolutely loves. Kirkman spoke to Eric Deggans about the long-anticipated season 2 of his animated series Invincible, premiering November 3rd on Prime Video.
Now, is it fair to say that part of what you do is take these classic genre forms that we're used to, whether it's the zombie story or it's the Superman story, and kind of modernize them and tell them in a way that feels more like a contemporary story? And I'm wondering, if you think that's what you do, what do you see in the story that Invincible is telling that reflects that?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think really what it is I'm taking familiar stories that have been told in genres multiple times. So when it comes to zombie storytelling, if you've seen 100 zombie movies, you kind of have a sense of what to expect when certain things happen in a zombie story. And so Walking Dead strives to do the opposite or do something different in those instances so that you're constantly, as a fan of the genre, being lulled into expecting a certain thing and then not getting that and getting something better or different or not as good or whatever, but it keeps you on your toes. With Invincible, there's almost 100 years of superhero comic book storytelling and 30, 40 years in, you know, film and television. And I think we're in a similar situation where people expect superhero stories to go in a certain way. And so Invincible is by lovers of superhero fiction, but we're able to take that love of superhero fiction and manipulate it into something exciting and new and different. So as we're telling stories with Invincible, we know exactly what the fan base is expecting or thinks they're going to get because we're the fan base. And so, like, as a storyteller, it's kind of like sitting back and turning the dials and going, okay, you think the villain's going to do this because this happens and then he's going to lose, but I'm going to make him win. And what happens when he wins? That leads to 5 other stories that you don't usually get in superhero fiction because the bad guys never win.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of when I first read Watchmen, and I realized that it seemed like part of what Alan Moore was kind of saying was that if you're the kind of guy who's going to put on a costume and beat up criminals to stop crime, there's got to be something psychotic about you.
it's not the kind of decision most people would make.
Exactly. And so once you're starting there, you know, the story takes on, you know, this unexpected tinge, but it also just completely makes sense. So I don't want to completely give away what happens in the first season in case some of the people listening haven't seen it. But what happens with Invincible's father, in a way, it's kind of like that. It kind of makes sense, but boy, it's kind of brutal. And that's one thing that I think, you know, even casual observers might say about the show. It is visceral at times and gory at times for an animated show. But what else is it about the content or the story that you're telling that you feel is subversive in a way that maybe people wouldn't notice at first?
Well, I mean, I think the violence is one aspect of that. I think the goal there is to just bring a level of realism to superheroes in an unexpected way. So, you know, if you had characters like Superman that were actually fighting in our world, they would be doing a tremendous amount of collateral damage, or they wouldn't be. And, you know, how is it possible that they wouldn't be? Well, they'd have to spend a tremendous amount of effort, you know, trying to avoid collateral damage and trying to manage the way they're fighting. And even that's interesting and not necessarily something that you see. So, I think it's just trying to find like new angles into things. But, you know, they're startlingly, it's crazy that, you know, when you compare Walking Dead and Invincible almost ends up being more violent at times, even though it's not a horror zombie thing. It's just because, you know, you have like imbalanced power sets and incredibly strong people fighting against people who aren't that strong and they don't really know it sometimes. And, you know, so bad things happen. And, you know, just trying to bring a slight level of realism to a completely bizarre world.
Now, I noticed looking at the credits, you've got Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg listed as executive producers. And, you know, these are guys who are also known for really sort of gonzo adaptations of graphic novels and comics like Preacher and The Boys. And I'm wondering, what do they bring to what you're doing? Are they particularly involved in Invincible?
Well, I mean, they're definitely involved. They bring a lot of cachet to the project. And they do have a real knack for, you know, finding comic properties and getting them made. And it's been great being able to bounce ideas off of them and see what their thoughts are on things. You know, we're working with them on the film side of things. And so it's really just an overall partnership to, you know, make sure that they're involved in all things Invincible. So as the live action movie gets closer to coming out, hopefully once these strikes and everything are over, you know, you'll kind of see that, you know, they're working with me on the overall Invincible plan, if that makes sense.
So this is an interesting time to be bringing a TV show that features a superhero, because there's all this talk about superhero fatigue, and we've seen some highly anticipated projects, everything from the Flash movie to Secret Invasion on Disney Plus, do as well as people expected, get worse reviews than people expected. And I wondered, what do you think about this whole notion that there is superhero fatigue out there? Do you buy into it? And how do you think Invincible sort of avoids that challenge?
Well, I think this is a great time for Invincible to be out, because Invincible debuted in 2003 as a comic book series. And at that point, superheroes had been running strong since the 30s. And you could say that there was a bit of superhero fatigue in the comics at that time. And so Invincible is designed to be an off the beaten path superhero story that kind of comments on other superhero stories. When you watch Invincible, if you have, you know, an understanding of all the DC movies and all the Marvel movies, and if you've watched the, you know, the DC TV shows and the animated series from the 90s of, you know, Batman and Spider-Man and X-Men and all these shows, you know, you'll have like a vocabulary that will make the Invincible show richer for you, because you'll recognize the tropes and you'll see how we're changing them and you'll see how we are paying tribute to great superhero stuff that has come before, but also telling a new story, like, you know, within that. And so it's good that we're kind of at a point when people are like, oh, okay, you know, I've seen a lot of this stuff, because Invincible is designed to be something almost completely different that's offering, you know, a pretty different experience. As far as superhero fatigue, in general, there's probably 50 more superhero movies in the queue that are going to be coming out in the next like 5 or 6 years. I think there's going to be some good ones in the bunch. And I think it's just a flavor thing. You know, I think that these projects just need to offer something different. And I think people will be just as excited about them as they were a couple of years ago. So I'm pretty bullish on superheroes as a genre.
I've seen you talk in past interviews about how you felt it was important to bring diversity to the TV version of Invincible. And that was a reason why you made his mom Korean, which would make him half Korean, and his best friend slash girlfriend black. And I was wondering, do you have any sense about why you didn't do that in the original comic? And then what changed your thinking to make you think, when you're going to do the TV show, let's make sure we reflect diversity here?
You know, if you look at the comic being published in 2003, the Guardians of the Globe were somewhat diverse. There was some diversity, but as a white guy in Kentucky, like, you don't really consider that kind of stuff. Or at least I didn't, you know, like, maybe that was just my shortcoming. You know, I thought I was doing a diverse cast. I thought I was doing something that reflected society and the diverse world that we live in. But looking back on it, it's like, oh, okay. So, you know, we've got one black guy that's a villain. There's not a lot of Asian characters. There's not any Hispanic characters. You know, there's nobody that's Muslim or anything like that. And you start to realize, like, okay, well, you know, this isn't necessarily reflecting modern society. And so that was just the goal. That was the thought when we were doing the animated series, is, you know, let's change things to more reflect the world around us in a way that we weren't cognizant of when we were younger doing the comics.
Cool. Now, you strike me as, other than Kevin Smith, maybe, you seem like the ultimate example of a fan who kind of, you know, achieved the ultimate dream. I mean, went from someone who loved comics to writing comics to writing TV shows and films that have been successful. And I'm wondering, how do you sort of balance
feeding the fans, you know, making sure that you create something that fans love, but not letting yourself sort of become a prisoner to what they expect or their view of what your work is. How do you hold on to that inner fanboy, but not let it control what you do too much?
I think the fact that I am such a devoted comic book fan has served me really well. And I think one of the ways that it's really helped me is I'm really, for the most part, doing all of my projects for an audience of one. When I first started writing my comics, I was trying to entertain myself, and I was trying above all to do a comic that would have excited me. And that's kind of held true as I've moved through my career. Every issue of Walking Dead has been written to keep me excited and keep me engaged. Every issue of Invincible, same thing. You know, when I sat down to write the pilot of Invincible, my main goal was to write a pilot episode that I feel as a fan would excite me. And so I think that by continuing to try and entertain the same fan, which is myself, I'm not allowing any of the outside influences from, you know, various TV shows existing or things like that, like cluttering things up too much. And I've been fortunate in that, you know, so far at least, you know, the kind of things that I find exciting that keep me engaged in the projects that I'm doing seem to be things that people like. I will eventually, inevitably, fall out of touch with society and start doing things that make no sense, that nobody likes. And I'm sure that day will come at some point, and I'm terrified of it, but prepared for its inevitability. So we'll see. But so far, at least, I'm still into things that other people are into. So, whoo.
Robert Kirkman, thank you so much for joining us on The Business. We really appreciate you taking time to talk with us.
No, this has been a real thrill, man. It was great talking to you.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from John Meek, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW shows on kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.